This is KJZZ's Morning Edition. Refugees from Central America are pouring into the United States, a trend from 2014 that seems to be growing along the U.S.-Mexican border again this year. Many of those are children sent here alone. The Border Patrol, the immigration courts, and refugee workers were overwhelmed 2 years ago. KJZZ's Fronteras Desk correspondent spread throughout Central America and into the United States to look at how the U.S. is managing the flow of refugees. Our series, The Costs Behind a Migrant Crisis, begins with KJZZ's Michel Morisco in Yuma.
Yuma County Sheriff Captain Eben Bratcher revs through the soft sands that threaten to swallow his four-wheel drive truck along the Mexican border. It's a region where migrant traffic dropped to a lull as quiet as a haunting desert dunes, but now is picking up again. The Yuma sector is a 126-mile stretch of U.S.-Mexico border that evolved from rusting strands of barbed wire sprawling over white sand dunes into a feat of complicated engineering. It now ranges from steel vehicle barriers along the Colorado River where Mexico, Arizona, and California meet to a miles-long cage of tightly woven steel screen monitored by enormous lights and cameras, then a high wall of steel screen that runs east of Yuma out into the desert, all at a cost of $6.5 million per mile. Yet, crossings persist, the tales of those attempts scattered in the northbound footprints, the crawl spaces dug beneath the massive security screens, the cracked water bottles and torn garments of clothing left to bake in the hot sun, and a splintered wooden ladder.
And here as we're driving along, you spotted what's appears to be a homemade ladder, suspiciously about as long as the fence is high.
The buildup led to a 90% drop in unauthorized crossings of Mexican nationals, but there's been a noticeable uptick with people trying to cross the border and trying to get caught.
What the word is now is that if you come across and claim asylum or seek asylum, turn yourself in. Give yourself up to the first border patrolman that you see, and then here you are.
In 2014, Central Americans flooded the U.S., mostly at the Texas border, and by April of that year, some 28,000 lone children were among them. The number dropped by half last year, and this year was already back to 2014 levels with more than 27,000 children. The Yuma sector has seen its own spike. In 2014, 178 children arrived here. By March this year, that number reached 1,500. CBP officials declined an interview and attribute the growth to seasonal trends. But in February, CBP Commissioner Jill Kerlikowske asked the House Appropriations Committee for enough funding to manage an expected 75,000 children at the border.
And we remain concerned about seasonal increases later this year and in fiscal year 2017.
He asked Congress for $12 million for the surge and a contingency fund of up to $23 million. Two Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents help a pair of women with children off a government van and into a shelter at a Yuma church. Marisol asked that we not use her full name. She fled Honduras in April after two uncles were murdered. She followed a route she was told about that brought her here to Yuma. She tied her four-year-old son to her back in a makeshift sling, then climbed over the first of 12-foot-high security screens, dropped into the U.S., and surrendered. Melanie Nelson is with Yuma County Interfaith. She says about 25 mothers are now dropped off every week.
If they've gotten here, they've made it. This is the easiest part of the trip where there are bus drivers that are there to protect them, much more so on their road to their families than at any other time on their trip.
Beatriz Escalante hitchhiked here from Guatemala. She also surrendered after climbing the wall. She did it for her child, she says, because there's no work in Guatemala. For now, she has a Greyhound bus ticket and an immigration court date ahead of her in Chicago. She sits in the grass by a water fountain with her toddler in one arm and waits. Michel Marisco, KJZZ News, Yuma, Arizona.
In 2012, a senior official in the Department of Homeland Security declared that Mexico's southern border with Guatemala was now essentially the southern border of the U.S. That was 2 years before the child migrant crisis that saw tens of thousands of young migrants from Central America crossing into the U.S. Since then, the U.S. has expanded its own border enforcement efforts by assisting Mexico on its southern border. And they've had some success. In 2015, fewer Central Americans made it to the U.S. But at what cost? In the second part of our Fronteras Desk series, The Costs Behind a Migrant Crisis, KJZZ's Lauren Madelon reports from southern Mexico.
To set the scene, let's go on the river that separates Guatemala and Mexico, Rio Suchiate.
Rucho!
We're on a raft, one of dozens that ferries people and goods back and forth 24/7.
Corn, beans, rice, oil.
And migrants heading north.
Man, it's too important. It's too important because a lot of people eat from this job.
That's Carlos Mejia, deported from the U.S., he says, last year. His rafts go under a legal border crossing, a bridge that spans the river. Authorities turn a blind eye.
Any of these days, police or the government try to come and close this, this is going to be a big trouble.
This border is porous, even after the U.S. pressured Mexico to start Plan Frontera Sur, its southern border plan, in July 2014. Mexico sent 300 immigration agents from other parts of Mexico to the south, raided trains and migrant hostels, and set up mobile checkpoints in the Mexican interior. Washington supporting this crackdown with training, technology, and intelligence. Fast forward to today.
At
a small diner north of the border, a man from Nicaragua asks for money to continue his way north. His worry now? You're a trophy catch right now, he says. They're hunting us down, he says. Deportations of Central Americans from Mexico rose by nearly 70% in the first 13 months of the plan. Some believe that number comes at the expense of human rights. Clara Longs with Human Rights Watch in San Francisco.
So U.S. involvement in the southern border of Mexico is worrying precisely because of how hidden it is, not just in terms of what the U.S. is doing, but what Mexican authorities are doing with U.S. support.
So what exactly is the U.S. supporting? Neither government talks openly about their work in southern Mexico. Adam Isaacson's at the Washington office on Latin America.
There's sensitivity about anything that looks like the gringos coming down and telling them what to do.
Washington's committed at least $100 million to support Mexico's southern border program since 2014. As of February of this year, $20 million's been delivered. And some who work the border are quite happy with the help they're getting. A Mexican immigration agent would only talk if her identity wasn't revealed. She feared retribution from her superiors. She showed her credentials, was in uniform, and arrived with a trusted go-between. I've seen U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers here, she said. She said CBP agents work regularly inside a migrant detention center near the border. Our border is weak, she said. U.S. agents come to interview migrants we catch. They can identify people we've deported before. And that's been crucial, she adds.
En esa parte, ha apoyado al instituto.
Yet that help coincides with mounting allegations against some of her colleagues. Mexico's Human Rights Commission says complaints of extortion and violence by immigration agents rose by 52% in year one of Plan Frontera Sur.
I think it's a crime.
Human rights worker Diego Lorente is one of the few people not in law enforcement allowed into the detention center.
El Plan Frontera Sur.
He believes U.S. pressure on Mexico complicates an already chaotic environment.
Está sufriendo ahora mucho más que hace dos, tres años.
The situation for migrants today is worse than in the last 2-3 years, he said. If migrants do make it past the border into the interior, they face numerous U.S.-style checkpoints, manned by an alphabet soup of law enforcement agencies, immigration, police, the army. Yet thousands of migrants appear undeterred. All across the southern border region, you see groups of them, in shelters, in buses, on the roads. Despite the dangers, Mexico remains a trampoline to the U.S. I'm Lorne Madelon in Tapachula, Chiapas.
The KJZZ series, The Costs Behind a Migrant Crisis, continues now. Yesterday, we went to Mexico's southern border with Guatemala to see how that border has changed after a 2014 security crackdown. Today we go inland to a town that shows how migration routes have splintered and become far more dangerous. Lauren Madelon is in southern Mexico.
Arriaga, Chiapas. 3 hours and 11 checkpoints north of the Guatemala border, a former hub of trains known collectively as La Bestia, the Beast. But now the train only comes here to bring work crews who are repairing the tracks. Hordes of migrants who once lined the tracks have been replaced by police and agents from Mexico's National Migration Institute. They circle the town in trucks after months of raids pulling migrants off trains. Today, Arriaga is still a first or second stop on the trek north. Guatemala and El Salvador have consulates here. But now, many migrants leave Arriaga on foot instead of on the train. 50-year-old Alex Morales was deported from Boston to Guatemala 3 months ago.
It's very dangerous. It's no easy way to the immigrant. If you got the money, they steal your money. It's very hazardous and dangerous.
He's hunkered down in Arriaga after walking the better part of 200 miles inland, avoiding checkpoints scattered across the Mexican interior. The checkpoints, mobile and fixed, are a major component of Mexico's border offensive. U.S. funds have paid for some of the checkpoints.
The checkpoint is working, you know. It's hard for immigrant people across Mexico, very hard. It's no easy way.
Police officer Gisela Claribel patrols the tracks.
Pues en los últimos meses, sí, hay más retenes.
More checkpoints have been put around Arriaga recently, she says. She defends the raids on trains, saying assaults and murder are commonplace on them.
También han habido más asaltos, asesinatos.
Mexico is concerned about migrants' welfare, she says.
El gobierno se preocupa por el bienestar de los inmigrantes.
The U.S. government's supporting the crackdown with technology and training, part of an operation that Mexico says is establishing order. Others say chaos. 22-year-old Salvadoran Miguel Angel Ochoa sits under a rail car. He says Mexican immigration agents aren't the problem, it's federal police.
De los federales sí, porque los federales si no les da dinero ya lo entregan a migración.
If you don't pay them, they hand you over to immigration, he alleges. He says he knows that because he didn't pay. He wanted to, but had no money. He was arrested, deported, and now he's trying again. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, has a field office near the Guatemala border that's dealing with streams of asylum seekers right now.
They walk for days. They walk during the night.
Perrine Leclerc heads the UNHCR office.
Our main concern is to make sure that those people who are in need of international protection have access to the asylum system in Mexico.
Leclerc says virtually all migrants express variations on the same theme: organized crime, poverty, weak social institutions. These outweigh the risks of heading north. She believes the migrant trail today is frayed.
It's more dangerous because people are more invisible. They are outside of the network, the humanitarian network, and it makes them much more vulnerable to extortion, to violence along the way.
The U.S. hasn't spent even close to all the money it pledged in 2014 to help Mexico in the south. Some analysts suggest it's because the U.S. has to choose its partners within Mexican law enforcement very carefully.
We have met with police who also talk about getting U.S. assistance.
Maureen Myers, an analyst at the Washington Office on Latin America. She says Mexico is basically stopping migrants for the U.S.
And the problem with that is if you have a country like Mexico that has a history of abuse against migrants and human rights violations, you're certainly giving more opportunity for that to happen.
Mr. Speaker,
in December, Congress approved $750 million for social and economic development in Central America, a near tripling of aid over the previous year. The rationale being that helping weak nations develop may be a better key to immigration control and more boots on the ground to detain them. I'm Lorne Madelon in Arriaga, Chiapas.
From KJZZ's Fronteras Desk, our series, The Cost Behind a Migrant Crisis, continues this morning. In the last 2 years, more than 10,000 Central American child migrants have faced deportation proceedings without ever finding a lawyer to help them. Jude Jaffe Block reports thousands more children face the same fate despite government efforts to fund more free lawyers.
A new law client is arriving at the Office of Public Counsel, a Los Angeles legal services organization, for the very first time. The client is a 14-year-old girl from Guatemala who only speaks Spanish. She allowed us to sit in as long as we don't use her name. She wears Converse sneakers with her school uniform. Her dark hair is piled in a top knot, and occasionally she flashes a shy smile. She's here because she's one of the more than 60,000 unaccompanied children put in deportation proceedings after being caught at the border in the last 2 years. And up until now, she was on track to be among the 40% of those kids who never find a lawyer to represent them. The legal assistant asked the young girl, who's in middle school, if she knows the immigration court process. She nods.
The procedure is we have to show up to court. We can't miss it. And come with a lawyer to explain why we left our countries.
She says a relative in Guatemala was abusing her, so her family hired a smuggler so she could join her mother in L.A. She could be eligible for asylum or a special legal status for foreign kids who were abused or abandoned. But winning those cases is complex. After she showed up in court 3 times without a lawyer, the immigration judge told her she had to find one to come to her next hearing in the fall.
He said it's September. I have to come to court with a lawyer. Otherwise, my mom will have to represent me.
But her mother, who works as a nanny, doesn't know immigration law or speak much English. They couldn't afford to pay the thousands of dollars lawyers charge for these cases.
Nerviosa.
I felt nervous and scared because we hadn't found anyone who would help us.
The free legal service providers were all booked. Finally, after months of waiting, she made it off a long wait list to be represented by public counsel at no cost. It's one of the legal service organizations getting federal funds to do this work. Bobby Gregg of the Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement says there's a federal statute that requires her agency
to provide representation to children. To the extent practicable, I think is the word used, yes, to the extent practicable.
In the past, that meant giving kids a legal orientation and sometimes putting them in touch with volunteer lawyers. But 2 years ago, when the number of child migrants surged, the agency began a pilot to pay for direct legal services for a small portion of the kids. More recently,
we were able to, within the budget, build a direct representation program that would serve more children, but certainly not all of the children.
The $54 million program includes paying for lawyers for 8,000 kids this year. A few thousand more will be helped by other government initiatives. But more than 30,000 Central American kids have arrived since October. Judy London of Public Counsel, where the Guatemalan teenager is getting help, says it's still a lottery which kids get lawyers at no cost and which don't.
The problem is that every child deserves to have a fair immigration court proceeding, and that cannot happen without a lawyer.
Many of these cases are time sensitive, since the window for some legal arguments, like child abandonment, can expire when a child turns 18. Immigration court data show the majority of kids without lawyers wind up skipping court and are ordered deported.
Until every child is guaranteed legal representation, there will not be fairness, and essentially children will remain at extreme risk.
In fact, that's the argument a federal lawsuit in Seattle is making. Stephen Kang of the American Civil Liberties Union is suing the federal government on behalf of child migrants.
The core claim in our case is that you cannot, consistent with the Constitution, put children in immigration court where they have to face off against trained government prosecutors without also providing the children lawyers of their own.
The government has argued there's no legal obligation to provide these children lawyers at taxpayer expense, but a judge recently denied the government's efforts to dismiss the case, and a trial is set for September. Jude Jaffe Block, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
Well, this week, KJZZ's Fronteras desk has been investigating the costs behind a migrant crisis. Over the last 3 years, tens of thousands of unaccompanied minors have fled Central America for the U.S. Many have wound up in the hands of labor traffickers. That was the case in Ohio, where 10 teenagers, some as young as 14, labored as prisoners for over a year. KJZC's Laurel Morales reports the final part of our series.
About an hour north of Columbus, past acres of rolling hills, farmhouses, and brown cows grazing in tall green grass, you'll find a trailer park. Standing outside one particular trailer brings back bad memories for this young man from Guatemala.
Había bastante cucarachas.
It was in really poor conditions, like a lot of roaches, holes everywhere. It was just very bad.
He didn't want to use his name because of the threats his captors made against him and his family. He came to the U.S. with the promise of a good job and the chance to go to school. What he got? 12 hours a day, 6 days a week of debeaking, vaccinating, and cleaning up after chickens at an egg farm. He says he and the other teenagers earned $500 a week, but the traffickers who lured them north kept all but $60. The leader of the trafficking ring, Alvaro Castillo Serrano of Guatemala, earned at least $225,000 off the kids' labor.
Pagaron el coyote y...
I didn't think it was illegal. I thought they were helping me because they spent the money to bring me here.
Trafficker Castillo Serrano told the boy he owed him $15,000 for smuggling him into the U.S. The men held a deed to his family's farm as collateral. When they first arrived in the U.S., the teenagers were picked up by the U.S. Border Patrol and put in federal custody. That's where Castillo Serrano and his co-conspirators claimed them. They posed as friends of family. Federal officials at Health and Human Services then handed the kids over to the trafficking gang. At a January Homeland Security Subcommittee hearing, Ohio Senator Rob Portman took HHS to task.
The horrible trafficking crime that occurred in Marion, Ohio, could likely have been prevented if HHS had adopted common sense measures for screening sponsors and checking in on the well-being of at-risk children. Protections that are standard, by the way, standard in foster care systems run by all the states.
HHS spokesman Mark Greenberg said the challenge was a program that increased over 3 years from 6,000 kids to nearly 60,000.
There is no question we were facing a whole set of capacity issues.
Since the fall of 2013, Central American families have sent at least 90,000 children to the U.S. A Senate investigation showed HHS placed at least 19 of those children into the hands of traffickers. And those are just the kids we know about.
The system was ripe for this to happen.
Jessica Ramos is an attorney who works with unaccompanied minors in Ohio.
Due to the surge and the way that the government reacted to it, the way that they relaxed their standards.
Since the Ohio arrests, HHS officials say they have stepped up sponsor screening practices and hired 70 more employees. But they anticipate more unaccompanied minors. The violence in Central America shows no signs of stopping. The young boy from Guatemala says his parents, his entire family, wanted him to escape the gangs.
There will be like killings almost every day. These gang members, they're all covered up in tattoos. They shave their heads. There's a certain age where basically they're trying to recruit you. And if you say no, they basically take you with them and they kill you.
Another victim was 18 from Honduras when Castillo Serrano pulled him into the Ohio labor ring.
Everyone who comes here has a suitcase or a backpack full of dreams they left back home.
He wanted to be a nurse. After leaving the egg farm, he went to work at a dairy farm. Now that he's not paying the traffickers, he has money to share with his family back home, and he's putting his sister through nursing school.
Yeah, she's living my dream, but it's much harder for her because she walks out the door and she has to make sure she's not going to get her head cut off.
Fleeing violence like this puts underage migrants in a vulnerable position. Traffickers and even some U.S. employers realize that and take advantage of them.
I mean, it's basically modern slavery.
Brian DeFranco is an immigration attorney in Ohio.
It's probably happening all over the country as we speak. There are entire segments of labor in this country that not only rely but thrive on this human trafficking.
DeFranco says unaccompanied minors now make up a third of his caseload. And he says until employers increase wages or lawmakers accept the U.S. needs people willing to do hard work for little money, some will continue to take advantage of those less fortunate and abuse the system. I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.